Hurricane Dorian lashes the Carolinas. Plus, WeWork considers slashing its valuation.
They last raised money at a $47 billion valuation. Investors have basically said there's no chance we will give you money anywhere near that.
And a closer look at PG&E's long record of run-ins with regulators and the courts.
We want to draw attention to the trust issue because it really does matter. And because the public deserves to be able to trust its utility.
This is What's News from The Wall Street Journal. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli in New York. Before we get to WeWork and PG&E, here are some other top stories we're following today. Hurricane Dorian is making its way along the coast of the Carolinas. Our Cameron McWhirter, reporting from North Charleston, says the hurricane is dancing on the edge of a Category 3 storm.
We've been having very strong winds and pelting rain, power outages, transformers have been exploding downtown. You know, that's a very low-lying city, and in the historic old areas, there's been a lot of flooding from storm surge and the rain. It's really been pretty consistent since early this morning, late last night and early this morning. The circle is moving north along the coast. It hasn't hit made landfall, but these bands of the storm are just periodically whipping the city.
Forecasters expect the storm to weaken slightly and stay in the Category 2 range, but Dorian's path has been difficult to predict. The hurricane devastated the Bahamas, where it made landfall on Sunday, killing at least 20 people. U.S. stocks rose throughout the day on Thursday after the U.S. and China agreed to another round of trade talks in Washington in October. But while that's reigniting hopes of a trade truce in the short term, our markets reporter Gunjan Banerjee says the picture could change quickly.
People are definitely bracing for more volatility in both directions. And, you know, I think investors can clearly see that tweets and other news on trade have driven big moves across bonds, stocks, currencies, markets over the past few months. So they're definitely wary that, you know, things could fall apart quickly and progress could also be made quickly. So they're definitely girding for big moves in either direction.
The Dow rose 373 points, up 1.4%. The S&P 500 rose 1.3%, and the Nasdaq gained 1.75%. And speaking of trade, tensions between the U.S. and China are still dimming the economic picture for the Federal Reserve, which is expected to make another rate cut later this month. The Wall Street Journal's Nick Timiraos says investors are expecting a quarter percentage point rate cut.
Since the Fed's July meeting, the global growth and trade policy outlook have both darkened, and that's why the Fed is likely to cut interest rates by a quarter point at its meeting in 2 weeks. It doesn't look like the U.S. data has turned so weak, however, to compel the Fed to make a larger half-point move.
The Fed's next meeting will be held on September 17th and 18th. New York City is suing T-Mobile, claiming the company's prepaid Metro brand sold used phones as new devices and overcharged customers. The lawsuit is seeking a restitution fund for victims, among other damages. The suit comes as a group of state attorneys general from 17 states, including New York and California, is moving to block T-Mobile's planned acquisition of Sprint. T-Mobile says it is investigating the allegations in the latest lawsuit, but says they are, quote, completely at odds with the integrity of our team. We've been reporting on investor skepticism of shared co-working space WeWork. Now, a Wall Street Journal exclusive. WeWork's parent company is considering a big reduction in its valuation as it prepares for its initial public offering. Joining me now in our studio with more details is Wall Street Journal reporter Maureen Farrell. Maureen, what is the latest you can tell us about how much of a reduction WeWork is considering and why?
Sure. So what people have told me is that it's been a bit of a wake-up call since WeWork has started meeting with potential public investors. Potential demand has been really weak. They last raised money at a $47 billion valuation. Investors have basically said there's no chance we will give you money anywhere near that. Now they're looking more like $20, $25 billion. There's still a wide range being discussed. But even there's questions of how much demand they're going to have.
And speaking of questions, this, of course, is coming amid a lot of new details we're learning about WeWork and its business practices and about co-founder Adam Neumann. Investors certainly have a lot of questions.
They do. I mean, everything from why are you losing so much money? You're growing, but when are these losses going to end? What's going to happen? And why, Adam Neumann, the CEO, have you taken out, have you sold shares of your company? Why have you taken out all these loans from the company historically? There are a lot of questions, a lot of things people hadn't really seen before, especially in terms of corporate governance things and the founder's relationship with his company.
And at the same time, WeWork is preparing for a roadshow leading up to its IPO, and that is a fluid situation. But what can you tell us about what we know now?
What we know is that it's very fluid. It could start as soon as next week. Or they could keep on talking to investors. There's a sense that maybe if they had a little more time educating investors about the business, they could go in October and they could get a better reception. On the other hand, some people just say, let's just go now. It's when can it get better? Another option, Adam Neumann flew to Tokyo last week, we understand, and met with one of his biggest investors, SoftBank, and they discussed, you know, whether SoftBank would come in and put a lot of money into the IPO or whether SoftBank might actually give them money in which they would have and then they would wait to go public until next year.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Maureen Farrell joining me in our studio in New York. Thank you so much, Maureen.
Thanks for having me.
And we have a deep dive on WeWork on our podcast, The Journal. You can listen to Wednesday's episode and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Now, a story about PG&E, the utility responsible for causing deadly wildfires in California. A Wall Street Journal investigation found the utility at times misled regulators, withheld data, and hindered investigations. For more on the investigation, our Charlie Turner spoke with reporter Rebecca Smith.
Rebecca, PG&E, the giant California utility, is in bankruptcy court due to liabilities from its role in accidentally causing forest fires. It's also under federal probation following felony convictions tied to a deadly gas pipeline explosion in San Bruno, California. But this seems to be really just the tip of the iceberg for PG&E. You report that for more than 25 years, the company has run afoul of regulators and the courts. Is there anything about PG&E that stands out about its illegal or unethical activity? Or is it just the fact that its misconduct seems so widespread?
Well, I think the main thing is that the misconduct is widespread and that it appears to have gone on for a very long period of time. I think this is one of the things that's puzzling public officials now who are trying to figure out what to do with the company. I mean, it's one thing if a company says, well, yeah, we have problems and we'll fix them, and it fixes them. But the problem with PG&E is that in many instances, it promises to do things that it never does. I mean, one of the things we've seen a longstanding problem with is inspecting different kinds of inspections of its system. And this is obviously extremely important for safety. But sometimes it has people do these inspections who aren't qualified to do them. At other times, its records are not reliable and may even have been falsified. So it all boils down to a big problem of trust for the public and for public officials.
Talk about the falsifying of records at PG&E that begins your story.
So what happens is the company decided to use new work tracking software around 2009. And almost immediately, there were problems with the way employees were using this work tracking software in that they were doing things that would make it look like they were able to keep up with the workload. So this speaks to a problem that often pops up at PG&E where it doesn't have enough people to do the work that they're supposed to do. So in this case, roughly a decade ago, people start making entries that are not correct and that it had the effect of making it look like they were doing okay with the work. And at various times in the story, we talk about how employees went up and told their higher-ups that there was records falsification happening. At one point, the company appeared to try to do something about it, but it never went back to see whether the steps it had taken were effective. The long and the short of it is, for about a decade, records are being falsified. And these are records that are very important ones. It has to do with whether people are going out and marking the location of underground electric cables and gas pipelines before excavators dig. It's part of the national call before you dig 811 system. At any rate, tens of thousands of records were entered incorrectly. Probably some were by mistake, but obviously many were intentional. And as a result, there weren't enough locators to do the work. And the public and these excavators were at risk of possibly hitting something. And we know that there were dozens of cases in which they hit things underground. Obviously, this is terribly risky. If you, you know, nick a gas pipeline, you could have a major explosion. If you nick an electric cable, you can get electrocuted. So record keeping matters.
I can't imagine how customers, you know, of the utility and residents in general feel about this, you know, feel about a utility that has all these problems.
You know, I've been in California since the 1980s. And when I moved to this state into the Bay Area, PG&E was a highly regarded company, I would say. Its reputation, its image has certainly slipped in the last three decades. And so one of the things we want to point out in this story is, and we put together a list of about 30 or so penalty cases, is that the company really has trust issues. And I don't see how the bankruptcy court or the federal judge can finish the work they're doing with this company unless they feel like they have a company that is worthy of the public's trust. The company has new management. As of April, it has 10 of the 13 board members are new, and it has a new CEO, and it has a new president of the utility company. So there are a lot of new faces there. And having spoken with several of them, I know how sincere they are. They understand that this is a crisis and that you can't have 16 million Americans depending upon a utility that can't be trusted. But I also suspect there are probably problems there that haven't yet come to light. So, you know, I don't know what to say. We want to draw attention to the trust issue because it really does matter and because the public deserves to be able to trust its utility.
Wall Street Journal reporter Rebecca Smith joining us from San Francisco. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Thanks, Charlie.
And for Rebecca's full story, please head to our website, wsj.com. That's what's news for this Thursday afternoon. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.